Hello, it's June 22nd, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are having a great weekend. And welcome to part two of What Happened After the Club. And on part two, it will be a continuation of the Karina Homer story. And I'll give a quick recap first and then dive right into the story without going into more historical facts about Boston in the beginning. So that's the only change of format for today's episode, and with that, let's dive in to today's part two. In part one of What Happened After the Club, I introduced you to our main character, 19-year-old Karina Homer, an au pair from a small town in Sweden who aspired to travel the world. As luck would have it, she secured a job as an au pair through an agency near her home, won some money in a lottery, and was subsequently placed with a couple near Boston to care for their children. Karina loved her time in Massachusetts for the most part, working with children she adored, meeting and becoming friends with fellow Swedish au pairs, and she was excited that her boss gave her access to his loft in Boston on her off days, so she could relax and possibly have fun. However, things took a turn for Karina when several weeks after her arrival, she wrote to her friends that she wanted to cut her assignment short and return home due to unexpected duties from her bosses. And she mentioned something else sinister and said, quote unquote, "Something terrible has happened. I cannot tell you right now what it is, but I will tell you when I get home." Her friend didn't know what Karina meant by this, but was eager to find out what had happened to Karina after she came back. However, little did her friend know that Karina would not make it back home, and her friends in Sweden and America could hardly fathom the reason why. After a night of fun and trying to drown her troubles, their friend Karina was massacred and discarded like trash, and her friends and family wanted to know why and by whom. But as they would come to find out, the investigation would lead to more questions and theories than answers. This is What Happened After the Club, Part 2. Back at the crime scene, homicide detectives were summoned, and the lead investigator assigned to the case was veteran officer Tommy O'Leary. At the scene, Detective O'Leary and other officers noticed that not only was half of Karina missing, but also that there was no blood found at the crime scene, and the body looked like it had been thoroughly washed, suggesting Karina was killed somewhere in town, taken to someone's house possibly, dismembered, cleaned, and then discarded in the trash. Investigators also noticed that Karina's body looked as if it had been precisely cut, and a later autopsy confirmed she'd been sliced with a high-powered tool, possibly an electric saw. Karina had also been cut below her rib cage and above her hip, and her spine had been severed. The autopsy also confirmed that the bruising found around Karina's neck was caused by strangulation, along with some blunt force trauma. However, with the lack of DNA found at the scene, despite a few fingerprints and the lack of clothing, investigators had no real clues to go on to determine who could have committed this brutal crime against Karina. With this standstill, police went to the press about the gruesome discovery of Karina. And after the local news reported about the murder, the news spread like wildfire, and a few tips began trickling in, including a call from one of Karina's employers, Frank Rapp, who said he and his partner, Susan, became concerned after they were unable to reach Karina that weekend. And some tips came in from Karina's local friends, who said they went out with her that night she went missing. Detective O'Leary and his team was now making progress with the case, and he wanted to try to get a picture of Karina's life over the last 48 hours from the witnesses who had come forward. According to reports, police spoke with a few of Karina's local friends, and they told detectives that after they had gotten ready for a night out at Karina's weekend loft space, they went to Zanzibar, and Karina had some drinks, possibly had too much to drink, and then they lost her shortly before the club closed. They said they waited around for a while for Karina to show up, but she never did. So they went their separate ways back home and assumed she had either gone home or somewhere else. Another friend also told detectives that on the night Karina went missing, Karina told her she was going to an after-hours party with some people she had just met, but didn't know who these people were. Also, around the time detectives began questioning Karina's friends, other tips came in from people who claimed to have seen Karina that night at different spots in and around Zanzibar. One report states a witness phoned police and told them they saw Karina talking to a group of men inside Zanzibar, but couldn't confirm whether or not she left with them. Another witness told police that a bouncer escorted Karina out of the bar due to her being very intoxicated, and they said they saw Karina try to get back in, but she was turned away. Reports state another witness came forward and said they saw Karina walking alone between 3 and 4 a.m. somewhere near Tremont, Boylston, and Park Streets. Another witness also came forward and stated that he was friends with Karina and had seen her getting into a gray Mitsubishi with another group of men. He said he was concerned about this and told detectives that he leaned into the window and told Karina, quote-unquote, "Let's go, you came here with us." Apparently because he didn't trust the men Karina was allegedly in the car with, especially because she was allegedly drunk. But he said one of the men in the car told him, quote-unquote, "Get away from the car, you little shit, or I'll crush your fucking head." However, the identity of this friend has never been revealed, nor have the men in the alleged gray Mitsubishi. Also, as previously stated in part one of what happened after the club, other witnesses came forward and said they saw Karina dancing with an alleged homeless man not too far from Zanzibar. And finally, reports state that a witness came forward and stated they saw Karina interacting with another man not too far from Zanzibar, and his name was Herb Witten. According to reports, Herb Witten was a 49-year-old fixture around town, as the club scene knew him as the man who would bring his large Pyrenees dog along to interact with clubgoers in the neighborhood, primarily on the weekends, and he would sometimes dress he and his dog up to match, to get tips possibly, and to try to impress the ladies. And around the time detectives learned about Herb, they obtained street surveillance video near Zanzibar the night Karina disappeared. Although they didn't spot her, they did spot Herb. And when they located Herb living 23 miles north of Boston in Andover, he admitted that he would take his dog to the city, mainly on the weekends, in an attempt to get attention from women, as he thought he'd have more of a chance of a date if they interacted with his dog and then with him. Herb also told police he remembered a little bit about Karina, but he didn't know what happened to her. After their brief interview with Herb, they discovered that Herb, a tall and burly man, was known as a sort of tinkerer and someone who enjoyed building things. Some also knew Herb as a person who had extreme mood swings and was somewhat creepy. However, to some of the people who knew him, they didn't think he would be the type to kill Karina or anyone else because they felt he lacked the intelligence. Detectives didn't think so either because they found him a little odd, but not a killer. However, they didn't want to steer Herb clear yet, as they knew he was a builder and had a van. And they thought he might have used tools like a saw, which the medical examiner believed could have been used to cut Karina. However, nothing inside Herb's vehicle indicated that Karina was inside the van or that a crime had been committed there. After their search and interview, and learning that Herb received a speeding ticket on his way back to Andover on the night of the murder, police considered Herb an unlikely suspect. However, detectives were not yet out of leads, as they felt they may have had a chance to gather some clues or information from Karina's bosses at the time, Frank Rapp and his partner Susan Nichter. Not much is known about the couple except that they had careers in the arts, two small children, and detectives learned that the couple had hired six Swedish nannies before Karina, and that shortly after she went missing and half of her body was found, Frank called the police to say that he felt the body may be that of Karina's. However, when detectives went to speak with them, it proved to be difficult as the couple was reportedly hostile and they barely cooperated with the investigation. They even told detectives to direct all questioning to their attorneys. Reports state, however, that Frank did give a brief statement to the press when they found out he and Susan were Karina's employers and told them, quote unquote, "I am definitely not a suspect. My family is completely devastated." Even though the couple decided not to speak fully to the police, it didn't stop them from investigating the couple. Reports state that over the next several days, focusing on them, they came to learn some very interesting information and events surrounding Frank and Susan. For instance, reports state the following Monday after Karina's remains were discovered, police in Dover, Massachusetts were dispatched to a mysterious dumpster fire at around 9:30 p.m. When they and the firefighters investigated, they found charred remains and trash, and the dumpster itself was also significantly damaged by the fire. And interestingly, the dumpster was located on the property of Frank and Susan. Dover police knew Frank and Susan were possible suspects in Karina's case, and therefore turned over the charred items to Boston police for possible examination in the case the couple was trying to dispose of potential evidence. None of the items ended up having any blood or human remains, but police did bring cadaver dogs to a trash transfer station in Dover for clues. But that too ended up with no leads. However, detectives still looked at Frank and Susan, and they later learned from former nannies hired by them that they were not the best of bosses, and most of them said Frank was a creep. They said he was very flirtatious and sleazy, and that he could cross the line and be very inappropriate. Also around this time, detectives heard rumors that when Frank would let Karina stay at his loft on the weekend, he would sometimes allegedly join her, and there were talks of an alleged affair. They also spread grotesque rumors that if the two had possibly had an affair, Karina could have possibly become pregnant, Frank could have been the father, and that if this happened, she was perhaps murdered to keep this all a secret. Which led to another rumor that that was why Karina was cut precisely in half, with only her upper half found. However, despite all of the rumors and uneventful events following Karina's murder, no real link between her murder and Frank and Susan could be found. But they did learn later that the couple hired Karina and many of their previous au pairs from an illegal agency run by Tej Sundin, who was fined twice for his illicit practices. And after Karina's murder, he told the local press that he blamed himself and his business was shut down. After questioning initial suspects, detectives tried to put more pieces together regarding Karina's murder. They thought that maybe even if Frank Rapp didn't have anything to do with her murder, there was more than likely a reason Karina's lower half was carefully missing, and it may have been due to a sexual assault or worse. And although footage from around Zanzibar showed Herb Witten in the area, there was no sign of Karina in the footage. They also thought it was odd slash interesting that a random dumpster fire occurred on the property of Frank and Susan shortly after Karina's body was found, and they were her employers, even though no trace of her was found in the charred remains. There was also word that Karina had been dating a Boston police officer at the time, but he was ruled out as a suspect. There were numerous reports of Karina speaking with men inside and outside the club. Still, none of them could be pinpointed or named as actual suspects. And detectives had much more to look into regarding Karina's murder. Still, they were no closer to solving her case or finding an actual suspect, and the investigation continued. Reports state, though, detectives in the case were thrown for a loop when previous possible suspect Herb Witten committed suicide in his sister's bathroom 5 months after Karina's murder. Maybe it was due to other reasons outside of Karina's case. Still, some, possibly including detectives, thought that perhaps he killed himself due to the stress of Karina's investigation, even if he maybe had nothing to do with her murder. Continuing with the investigation, in December of 1996, a man living in neighboring Brookline, Massachusetts, was arrested for kidnapping and attempted rape in Boston. Although these crimes had happened before numerous times in Boston, what piqued the interest of investigators was that the suspect allegedly kidnapped the victim near Zanzibar, the same place Karina had last partied at. As news of the kidnapping and attempted assault spread across local headlines, suspicion around the man intensified. The more investigators dug, the clearer it became. He had both the means and the opportunity to commit the brutal murder of Karina just months earlier. Reports also state he owned a full arsenal of tools, more than enough to dismember a body, and he had access to multiple vacant properties, any one of which could have served as the perfect place to carry out such a grisly crime. However, the man's charges were reportedly dropped, and he went back to working in real estate, making him, according to detectives, another unlikely suspect. However, again during the investigation, many Swedish au pairs in the area were questioned, and one told the press, quote unquote, "This whole thing freaks me out. It's giving me nightmares. I was standing in the window of my room last night feeling like someone was watching me." The young woman also mentioned that her family and friends back home were worried for her, as Karina's murder was all over the news back in Sweden. Other au pairs in the area stated that their families were scared back home as well, with another au pair, who also frequented Zanzibar with friends, saying in length, quote unquote, "We always meet other Swedish friends when we are out. We also meet German and Irish girls too. There are also a lot of foreign nannies around here. This is very scary." Lastly, a Swedish-born hair salon owner, who later moved to the Boston area, told the press, quote unquote, "This is not Sweden, and the young girls don't realize that. There is much more violence around here, and you have to be careful, especially if you are drinking." Eventually, the leads in Karina's case went cold, until another tip came in to the detectives about the lead singer of a band named Sleep Chamber, whose name was John Zawis. According to reports, John Zawis lived a short distance from Zanzibar, and curiously, Karina's body was found in a dumpster not far from his home. John was also known for being very eccentric and had an extensive animal bone collection, and his band's shows were very S&M and bondage friendly. However, there wasn't anything that definitely connected John to Karina, and the police ruled him out as a suspect as well. On a side note, however, after he was ruled out as a suspect, the stress from the investigation and the small media coverage of John as a suspect led John into a deep depression, a drug addiction, and to the dismantling of his band. As months led into years, Karina's case remained cold with no new evidence or leads. In May 1999, though, detectives learned about the murder of a woman living in Florida named Delia Lorna Mendez. And like Karina, she was found in a dumpster with her body cut in half and her lower half missing. At first, detectives thought maybe the two cases could be connected. However, unlike Karina's case, Delia was found with blood in the dumpster, while there was no blood found at Karina's scene. Delia was also beaten. Karina was apparently not. And Delia was not washed, and Karina was. Reports state that after hearing about Delia's murder and not tying her case with Karina's, detectives were back almost at square one. No new leads, suspects, or evidence have been found. And reports state that Karina's case has been at a standstill almost since 1999. There have been a few tips that have come in to detectives since then, but nothing substantial. And to this day, Karina Homer's murder case remains unsolved. The story of the unsolved murder of Karina Homer comes from the sources of the Boston Globe, Boston Magazine, South Coast Today, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, guys. I know that one was a lot with, you know, another unsolved 90s case. Very gruesome, very brutal. I want to start off by saying no one deserves this. I don't know what happened with Karina. I don't know. No one apparently knows what happened to Karina publicly. I'll get into that in a second, why I say publicly. But I do think it's awful how she died. The medical examiner said she was strangled, and that to me means more one of the most personal methods of murder ever besides stabbing. Karina saw her killer more than likely. She it was just a horrible way to go. And she was just trying to come to America, travel, make some money, and explore the world and explore a new world. And this is how she ended up. But let me start by saying, well, I read that when Karina's father found out about her murder and the grotesque way she died and how she was found, he asked Detective O'Leary what he was getting back. And he pretty much told him, he was getting the torso, but he's also getting her beautiful face. He tried to, clean it up a little bit, try to calm him, comfort her father for the most part, to tell him, Karina is still beautiful. Karina's, her face and torso only were found. But that's another thing I wanted to say. The lower half of Karina has never been found, allegedly, publicly. I'll say that again. I'll get into why I keep saying publicly. But she, her lower half has never really been found, according to the press. And I just think that's so horrible. And like, I do commend the lead detective, Detective O'Leary, for trying to clean it up, trying to comfort her father the best way he could regarding what he was getting back sent home to Sweden. And she did have a lovely, beautiful funeral service for friends and family back in Sweden. I did see some photos and it looked like it was a very serene scene, but you can tell they were obviously mourning their friend and family member. So I'm going to go down the list of suspects that I read about, and I want to, talk about what I think regarding each one, sort of. I'm going to go as quick as possible, but let's start with Karina's friend, the guy, according to the press, that said he saw Karina getting into her car with men that he didn't know, he felt sketchy about, and felt they may have taken advantage of her because she was obviously drunk. They've never been identified, the men in the car, nor the man who said he was a friend. I think that's a little curious for me. Like, I wish, he told his name to the press, or maybe he was scared. No one has, people have a right not to tell their name. But, I would think, I want to know more about this friend, who he was. But again, I don't know. So, he can't be a suspect, but the group of men, they're obviously suspects, but police allegedly were not able to pinpoint who they were. They could have had something to do with her murder, but who knows? I don't know. But it could be that those are possible suspects, in my opinion. Also, I want to go also back with that. They said Karina was known to be a flirt. She was not afraid to date men. That's not judging her at all, but she had her fun. She dated around. She was, cute to a lot of men. She was blonde, Swedish, foreign. A lot of men get excited about that. So, she took advantage of that. And, from what I've heard and read. So I'm not judging that. But I do wish, like the Swedish hair salon owner said, she realized, this is a different world. Be careful when you're drinking. But she was young. And it's just so sad regarding that. But it could have been any man who could have done this to her. It could have been a woman too, but I think it's more of a man who probably did this to her. And it could have been any of those men in the car, but again, detectives haven't been able allegedly to pinpoint any of those men in the car she allegedly got with, or rode with. Also, I want to talk about Herb Witten. I don't think he did it. He could have just been a, depressed guy who was a little odd and, flirted with Karina, but I don't think he did it, according to what I've read. He got a speeding ticket in the early morning hours of the murder, around the time period of the murder, and I don't think he would have had time to have taken Karina, killed her, tried to figure out something to do with her body, things like that, and come back to Boston to dump her other half. I don't think he had anything to do with it. Also, the people who knew him said he wasn't intelligent enough. I'm not saying that because I don't know the man, but that's what people who said who knew him, he wasn't that smart to come up with something like that. And unfortunately, I do think it's sad that he committed suicide, and I don't know why he would do that. He could have had other factors in his life. He could have had, the stress, like I said before, about the Karina case. Maybe he didn't want police to come back to think he had something to do with the murder and just had other issues and all this, and he decided to take his own life, which is unfortunate. But like I said, I don't think he had anything to do with it. Now, when I say things publicly, like, you know, there's been some facts or some things I've read that they've publicly never found her lower half, publicly never pinpointed anyone in that car she allegedly rode with from the club or whatever or near the area. Because I hope I don't get too controversial with this. Like I mentioned in the episode, she did date a Boston police officer. And a lot of people know that a lot of cops can get away with things that the general public cannot. I'm not saying the cop who she was dating at the time has something to do with this. I don't know. She could have, you know, it could have been anyone. But a lot of people have said on the blogs and, you know, seen some articles that sometimes some police officers, like I said, get the upper hand. Something could have gone left when she dated the cop or something like that. And he did something to her, possibly, and was able to dismember her, throw her body in the trash, unfortunately, and get a cover-up. Because I read there wasn't really a thorough investigation into this. I haven't found anything thorough about the investigation into the cop she was allegedly dating. I don't know, but it seemed very quick. It seemed very hush-hush, you know, under the rug. You know, she dated a cop, yes, but he wasn't found as a suspect. Why? We don't know, but he just wasn't. So, you know, it could have been anything with that. I'm not saying the cop did anything to Karina, but I'm saying there's been, as we all know, there have been a lot of times police officers can get away with things the general public cannot. And I'm gonna stop there with that, because if the cop had something to do with Karina's murder, he could have been able to just have a cover-up. But again, there's not enough evidence to say he did anything. I don't even know who the cop was, can't find a name or anything. It's just all went away with the police officer Karina was dating. Also, before I go into the other suspects, I want to pinpoint what she said to a friend saying something awful has happened. She's cutting her trip short. And I wonder if she was assaulted or something like that by a man or a woman or something like that, Karina. Because I don't think she would just cut her trip short and said it was that awful if she was just overwhelmed with cleaning or taking care of the children. I don't think that's what it is. I think something awful, like she said, happened. It could have had something to do with an assault. It could have been, she could have been hurt, robbed. Anything could have happened. And I do wonder what that was, which leads me into the last suspects, her employers, Susan and Frank. Now, I just thought they were kind of odd. I don't know why they just, maybe they didn't want to get involved. Maybe they didn't have anything to do with Karina's murder. Maybe they didn't. But there's so many factors regarding them. For me, was the number one. I know a lot of people say when cops come to your door, lawyer up, no matter what it is. It could be a speeding ticket. It could be a murder. It could be anything. You get hurt. You could have been, someone said something about you, lawyer up. So that's what they did. They didn't really want to get involved with this. I think it's really odd, though, that, you know, if I treasured my employer, I would want to talk, you know, be more involved than they were in my mind. Maybe do have an attorney on standby, but just immediately to brush off the cops and say, talk to my attorneys. A little interesting. The dumpster fire at their property shortly after the murder. That's interesting. Why would they, even though no human remains or blood were found on the charred remains, why would they burn something on their property? And he had, apparently, according to reports, Frank and Susan had just gotten a dump permit shortly after her body was found, Karina's body was found. That's interesting. What were they burning? You know, what were they throwing away in trash? What was this all about? But again, the report says no human remains or charred remains or blood were found on the clothing. I don't know whose clothing it was. It could have been Karina's. I mean, were they discarding her things like that fast, knowing she wasn't coming back? Why would they do that? You know, why not send it overseas to Sweden? I don't know. They were a wealthy family, so they probably could have afforded to send her stuff over to Sweden. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll never know. I do want to also talk about Frank allegedly being inappropriate with the six other nannies that they hired before Karina. That's also odd. Why were there six other nannies? I know they said most of them said he was inappropriate and sleazy. That's gross. So they may have left on their own or got fired. I don't know. But they kept hiring from this illegal agency over in Sweden. So this guy knew the agency owner, Taj, whatever his name is, knew that, possibly knew that Frank was being inappropriate. Why continue to work with them? Was it really all about the money? I guess so. I do think that possibly Frank may have been inappropriate with Karina. Maybe that was the thing that was awful that was that happened to her and why she wanted to leave. She could have also, like I said, possibly been pregnant. There were rumors about that. Could have also been having an affair with Frank, because, you know, that's his loft, not Susan and Frank's loft. His loft. Why only his loft? I guess because, I mean, he was a photographer and worked there and, you know, pretty blonde woman, you know, took advantage, and he took advantage of that. I believe, but I don't want to, like, say he did anything to Karina like that, like murdered her and dismembered her. But like I mentioned and like the press mentioned, it could have been true. It's a rumor. He was a suspect, him and his wife, Susan. Susan could have been jealous of Karina, could have taken her out, and then Frank cleaned up the mess. But again, this is all alleged. We don't know, because the kids loved her, and we don't know what really happened. But I do think it's just really odd how Frank and Susan were with the police, how they were towards Karina allegedly, why Karina wanted to cut her trip short. I think it sort of leads to her employer, but I'm not saying they had anything to do with her murder. It could have been anyone who had something to do with her murder. But I do think that they could have been the possible reason why she wanted to cut her trip short. And it could have been something really gross between her and Frank. But like, again, this is all alleged. It's only rumors. I can't pinpoint anything because I was not there. Also, regarding the short-term suspect, John Zuise, I don't think he had anything to do with it. I think he just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, which was living near the dumpster where Karina's body was found. He was eccentric. He was possibly weird. He was into bondage, S&M. That doesn't make him a killer. And unfortunately, he was depressed by all this attention he got, because he probably already felt, you know, shunned by the everyday person because of how eccentric he was. But I don't think he had anything to do with it. I also heard talks that Karina could have dated someone who was possibly involved with someone who was an associate of Whitey Bulger. I don't know. Could have been. And she didn't know. And she may have known too much. And they were like, oh, well, she can't tell our secrets. I'm not saying she would have. She may have fallen into the wrong crowd while she was there just for some excitement. I'm not sure. Also, one of the guys who she allegedly went off with in the Gray Mitsubishi, if that was true, could have had some shady dealings with either, you know, the police or criminal gangs or something like that. And she could have been, again, at the wrong place, wrong time. It could have been anyone. It could have been anything. I think it's really horrible how Karina spent her last days trying to have a good time. And this is her end. And Laura has never been found, which is also horrific. And I just hope that one day her family gets the closure they deserve for Karina and that she deserves. Because there's so many suspects. And, you know, I hope that one day it can be solved. Her murder can be solved. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to part two of what happened after the club. And I hope you found it interesting. If you liked what you've heard and haven't done so, please leave a rating, review on whatever podcast platform you listen to the show. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.